Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal. I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis. How are you?
I'm well.
I have to just talk about something that happened to me the other day. I was home with the family, and I went grocery shopping, and I went to a mainstream grocery store, and I was just buying some staples, and I said, you know what, I don't want to stop at another store, I don't want to stop at a specialty store, I'm gonna do something I hardly ever do, and I bought meat in the mainstream grocery store, which is just some, either I bring it from the restaurant or I go to one of the specialty stores or butcher or whatever.
Snob.
But well, that's what I generally don't buy meat in the mainstream supermarket. I just don't.
And then you eat better meat.
And then I eat better meat. So I got a rack of ribs from the supermarket of pork ribs, and I said, I'll roast these for a little while, and then I'll finish them on the grill, and we'll just have some ribs. It'll be simple. I can do other stuff around the house while I'm cooking, roasting them in the oven. So I buy the ribs, and I cook and I roast them in the oven. And obviously, I roast them in a pan. We talked about pan drippings and things like that the other day. And I gather the stuff in the bottom of the pan, okay, and I let it settle out. Well, basically, you would expect from ribs, you would see 50% fat and maybe 50% liquid coming out of the ribs. Well, what I'm going to tell you is, 3-pound rack of ribs. No, maybe it was more than that. Maybe it was 4-pound rack of ribs. There was over 16 ounces of what was basically saline liquid that had dripped out of these ribs. The ribs, and you've heard us talk about this before on the show, but one of the things that the meat producers are doing is they're pumping up these meats with saline solution. And there's no question in my mind that these ribs had been pumped up with saline solution, and I couldn't believe the amount of liquid that came out of these. That wasn't fat. That was, it was just disgusting, horrible injectables.
You know what it was?
Yeah.
It was weight.
Yes, it was weight. That's exactly what it was.
It's sold by the pound.
It's sold by the pound. So you want to keep your price per pound down. Put, saline liquid into the meat.
Thanksgiving turkeys are notorious for being pumped
absolutely.
Up. And they say, well, they're juicy. Well, mm-hmm. They're juicy till you cook them.
Right.
Because that
runs right out. That's the thing that people, I think, don't understand, is all of that, when you cook it, just runs right out, all of that saline.
So,
and the salt is left.
So what percentage of fat was
so now
in your ribs?
What was fat and what was this saline solution?
Uh-huh.
There was 4 or 5 times as much saline solution as compared to the fat that came out of the ribs in hours because I did use a very low temperature to roast the ribs.
If you go to a reputable butcher, there are all sorts of things that are problems with our mm-hmm. meat. And you go to the reputable butcher, they say, oh, well, the meat's so much more expensive. Well, 16 ounces of liquid.
Right. I had 4 pounds of ribs, 16 ounces of use, and this is not something, we talked about making drippings and
making
using
gravy
drippings
from
to
the
make
drippings.
Gravy. There's no way I would use the drippings, these drippings,
it's
salt
water.
I might skim the fat off and do something with that. There's no way I would use these drippings.
So, yes, it's a lot cheaper per pound, mm-hmm. but you got 3 pounds of ribs and a pound of water.
Right.
So
what's the point?
So
exactly.
Is it really cheaper?
plus
it's not. It doesn't taste as good.
Yeah. So that was a mistake I made that I won't be making again. I just was one of those things where I thought, I'll save myself some time. I'll save myself some energy, and I'll eat some food that's a lot worse.
You can go and search around our website, either one of the restaurant websites, because mm-hmm. we serve. I'll give an example of something very different. Heritage breed turkeys mm-hmm. on Thanksgiving. So for Thanksgiving dinner, you can search around, and somewhere in the menus, you'll see a link to what heritage breeds turkeys are, mm-hmm. and they're not just organic. It's different,
right.
But they are raised very close to organically. When we buy these heritage breed turkeys from a butcher, and I'm recommending, and there are also places where you can go buy one for your home, they're very expensive. They're much more expensive. Now, my mom would always save up the receipts at the supermarket, and with X $100 worth of receipts, you get a free turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you get what you pay for.
Right.
You get a free frozen turkey that's been pumped that's not very flavorful, and a lot of the weight of that turkey is salt water.
Right. It's basically worth the 29 cents a pound that it would otherwise
right,
cost.
Right, exactly. And so when you talk about the Heritage turkeys, what are they retailing for this year? I mean, they're very expensive.
Heritage turkeys probably $7, $8 a pound.
Now, that's very expensive, and that's more than just the salt water you're talking about, but the flavor is there. Now, if you go to an organic turkey...
Probably retailing this year for more like $6 a pound.
Yeah, they're coming
in
down
in the past, they were $7 or $8 a pound.
If you talk about just buying an organic turkey, which you can get for $2 or $3 a pound, you buy an organic, fresh, never-frozen turkey. If you buy it from a reputable producer, it will not be pumped up with salt water.
Right.
You're getting what you're paying for. Because, you know, there are all these tricks to have your turkey not taste dry and bland. Well, you need those tricks because modern 29-cent-a-pound turkeys are bland and dry.
Right.
You know?
And here's what I'm going to tell you. You're going to spend 20 hours and probably $400 on your Thanksgiving feast for your whole family. Spend $40 on a turkey.
Well, and I think the organic, never-frozen turkeys are definitely a way to go. But those breeds of turkey are designed to be all white meat
right.
and as bland as possible. If you can afford it, and they're expensive, but if you can afford it, you can go to Heritage Foods USA, you can go to our website and root around. There are a couple of links for places to get one, or you can ask if you've got a reputable butcher, ask for a heritage breed turkey, like an American bronze turkey or a Jersey buff turkey. You know how you cook those, Mark? Because we have one for my family every year. You put them in the oven. You baste them, a little bit of garlic, a little bit of rosemary,
salt and pepper.
I throw some walnut oil in there just because I like it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're delicious. The
right,
meat has flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what?
That's the thing. You know, when you talk about heritage turkeys, and Francis and I have talked about this last year and the year before as well. When you talk about the heritage turkeys, they have flavor on their own. It's not just a matter of what you're putting on them. There's a real richness and depth of character there if you eat real turkey that simply doesn't exist in the butterball.
But
right.
if you may inject it or you may deep fry it,
mm-hmm.
one of the reasons that deep fried turkeys, people really like them is because of the flavor that gets imparted.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, some of that moisture does get sealed in a deep fried turkey, but you're getting the flavor of fry, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When the French fried potatoes taste good because it's the fry that tastes good as
yeah,
much as
Yeah, it sure
potato.
Does, doesn't it?
So, you know, if you use a real turkey, then you don't need to use those tricks. I'm going to give one other tip there for people who are roasting a turkey or a bird of any sort.
Mm-hmm.
There's a device that I use that I picked up.
Right.
You can pick it up online at spanek.com. They're not a sponsor. We should
S-P-A-N-E-K.
We should call them and get them to be a sponsor. Because this is for free. But it's called a Spanek Vertical Roaster.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, we had the guy who invented it on the show last year. I used it last year for Thanksgiving and Christmas. It's tremendous. It cuts your roasting time. It keeps things moist. It's not a cheap trick. You do it in your oven.
Yeah, that's one of the things that, first of all, it cooks evenly, and we talked about how the meat just kind of falls off the bone because it cooks from the inside as well as the outside. But one of the things that it does is it really cuts your cooking time.
And
you need to put a lot of things in your oven for Thanksgiving. If you can make your 8-hour bird or your 6-hour bird a 3-hour bird.
And you throw it in the oven. And it goes in the oven. It's just a rack. It's a special kind of rack that your bird sits on in the oven and holds it upright and circulates air through the cavity. It's amazing. Check it out, Spanek.com, or try our website and take a look for it. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:15. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're talking today across the country to Jill Davey. She is the chef de cuisine at Josie Restaurant in Los Angeles. She's also the host of the Fine Living Network's Shopping with Chefs show, and she was also most recently on The Next Iron Chef.
Jill, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hey, it's great to have you. You were an early favorite of ours in the Next Iron Chef show, and you were just eliminated, sadly, not to dwell on a negative thing. But first of all, you made it to the Next Iron Chef, which is not, you know, young and coming, up-and-coming aspirants, but serious chefs who are competing on this show to be the Next Iron Chef. How did you come to compete on the show, and what are your thoughts of it now that you're no longer on it?
Well, I came to be on the show. A friend of mine asked me if I would be interested. I was like, well, you know, I guess I'd be interested on a level that it was, like you said, not aspiring chefs, and that everybody had already made their mark.
People who are accomplished.
That's correct. So, because I really would not. They've asked me to do Top Chef in the past. So I was like, not so much. But So, and I've done a lot of work with Food Network. I won the Hot Chef Challenge in South Beach, Miami. I've had a couple shows on the Food Network, so I'm pretty familiar with them, and I felt pretty comfortable saying, okay, well, why not?
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm kidding.
You know, one of the things that, and Francis and I talk to a lot of chefs, and we talk to a lot of people in the business about a bunch of different things, both on the air and off the air, and one of the things that I hear very frequently from chefs is, if they are accomplished, that they're afraid to go on a show like Top Chef, because if they get eliminated in some stupid challenge, they're going to be regarded as less than what they are because they got eliminated in, you know, and they're supposed to be so accomplished.
Indeed. Well, therein lies the no risk it, no biscuit theory. And having said that, I think that most certainly everybody has a different attitude towards it. You've never met me, but I'm pretty outgoing, pretty fun, and I don't always take myself ultra seriously. While I am a very serious chef and in the kitchen, by all means, if you come to the restaurant, yes. But, you know, if you put yourself up in a situation like doing Iron Chef, you kind of have to be ready to contend with all the emotional gamut that goes along with it. And, you know, certainly some of the challenges were were not exactly favorable.
Mm-hmm. Well,
sure. Conditions.
I want to talk about that, and I want to predicate this by saying Mark and I think that the two shows that I think really do have merit and do have value are Top Chef and Iron Chef. Those are the reality shows.
But in two different ways. Top Chef is kind of who's the next up and comer, and Iron Chef is, you know,
it's a competition that is related to the food skills that you would have in the business.
Right.
Unlike Gordon Ramsay, which is how much can you listen to that jerk yell at you?
Right. How much abuse can you take this week?
Right. So, but that
my answer, by the way, not a lot.
Yeah.
I'm not great at taking abuse like that.
I think they should invite Mark on the show just so when Mark punches him in the nose, it would get super ratings.
Yes, because I always treat my kids, especially as a female, that always works really well.
Yeah, exactly.
Just scream your head off at him. Well, no, now, but here's the reality of the situation is while this is a competition among accomplished chefs, the real competition is you're chef de cuisine of a restaurant every day and every night. You know, and
that's the real competition.
That's the real skill set.
Let's not kid ourselves here.
But that being said, I think that the show in which you were eliminated, the episode of The Next Iron Chef in which you were eliminated, was shocking to a lot of us in the business because it really embraced this whole idea of avant-garde cuisine and molecular gastronomy.
Right, which I'm really famous for. You didn't know?
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, that was a
facetious
remark.
That was my chemistry class in the sixth grade. It was called Digest and Eat It Too.
There you go.
Just so everyone in the audience knows what it is that we're talking about, it's a type of cooking that uses a lot of chemicals, a lot of advanced chemical processes. And one of the contestants said, you know, I spent my whole career trying to get chemicals out of the kitchen. Now I've got to put them back in. Do you think that was a relevant test? Do you think the Top Chef in America needs to know?
Should the next Iron Chef be intimately acquainted with molecular gastronomy?
I personally, if you want my honest opinion.
That's what we're asking for.
I'm a California girl. I'm a fifth generation California girl, 19th generation American, actually. And, you know, does an Iron Chef need to know what they are? I think it's pertinent because they're around, mm-hmm. and they do exist. Mm-hmm. And people are using them to make different kinds of cuisine, and that's their field of study. In terms of practicing it as an individual, as a chef, and have it be your style, absolutely not. There is absolutely no place in my life for lecithin foam.
Mm-hmm.
Lecithin foam is one of the ingredients that a lot of people use to make odd textures on this very avant-garde cuisine. It's also something people use to stabilize ice cream in the supermarket.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And so there are they are legitimate chemicals, and they do exist, like I said. But here's the crazy thing that is a little off-putting. You know, when you, as a chef, you do practice your own cuisine, and that's kind of part of it. Now, as an Iron Chef, obviously you're going to be working kind of outside your comfort zone and, you know, trying to incorporate other methods and different techniques that you maybe perhaps would not use in your own restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
But things like, you know, liquid nitrogen, lecithin, tapioca, xanthan, agar, you know, things that actually need a scientific formulation. I just, I'm not interested.
Yeah, you know, I want to talk more about this after the break, but what we're not saying, you know, Jill knows nothing about Italian cuisine. We're talking about a kind of a whole different area.
Yeah, Jill knows nothing about the scientific structure of lecithin when it is incorporated into.
we'll call it Jetson's cuisine, and with that, we'll be back in just a moment. 1450 WCTC time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Kathleen Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Kathleen showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission? To live up to the standards set by Kathleen Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The maragatta and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Kathleen Lombardi. You see, Kathleen Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or KatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. We're talking with Jill Davey, who is chef de cuisine at Josie Restaurant in Los Angeles. You should go try it. We'll link it up on our website. And she is most recently eliminated from the next Iron Chef competition in a very controversial episode where the Iron Chef candidates were required to use sort of advanced methods of cooking of avant-garde cooking that is very controversial, using chemicals and processes often associated with industrial food production on a level that some people are making great food with. But the question we're dealing with is this going to become an important part of American cuisine, and does a true American chef need to know about it? I think all three of us think no.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of knowing about it, yeah, I think everybody should be informed about it. But in terms of using it, it's a very personal thing, and I have no room for it in my kitchen.
Well, it's antithetical to the way I want to cook, but it's also antithetical to the way I want to eat.
Yeah, it's really kind of I call it a little Circus Vargas food. And there's a little song that goes along with it. It's like, dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
And I kind of envision, like, everybody throwing that, juggling, and here and comes the unicycle guy. But, you know, that's me. And that's not to say that there aren't some really amazing, serious chefs that are pushing the envelope, like Grant and Wiley, that are doing amazing stuff. And just
The references you just made were to Grant Ackett, a chef in Chicago, and Wiley Dufresne, a chef in New York. And let's talk about the inventor of this cuisine, or the grandfather of this cuisine, which is Ferran Adrià in Barcelona. Mm-hmm. But the idea is there are some guys doing really cool stuff on the avant-garde, on the edge.
Absolutely. And for that reason, it's no insult to them. And by all means, I'm so happy that they have, you know, pushed the envelope, because everybody has their own cuisine. But that's part of it. What if we all did Italian food? Come on.
But beyond that, it's different. They're pushing. They're on the edge, and I think that's kind of interesting food to go and try and see what relevance it has to cuisine overall. But when you take it to the point where, and I'll call out a guy who I think has taken it too far, although he's a great chef in some ways, David Burke has invented flavor spray, which you can buy in a supermarket, and you spray it on your cracker, and it makes it taste like pesto sauce.
I didn't know that, but I love David Burke.
I think he's a great guy. But
he's an amazing guy. He's hysterically funny.
And he's also can be
he's also very talented.
But when he works with stuff like flavor spray, that's not where we think. That's the opposite of where we think food should be going.
Right. I understand. I'm curious. I would imagine, and I don't know that much about.
Hold a moment. Hold just a moment. This is what we call a cliffhanger in radio. We're gonna have to wait till after the news for you out there to find out what Jill Davey imagines. We'll be back in just a moment. 1450 WCTC time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Today we're talking with Chef Jill Davey. She's the chef de cuisine at Josie Restaurant in Los Angeles. She's also host of the Fine Living Network's Shopping with Chefs show, and she was most recently on The Next Iron Chef. And we're having a lovely discussion about the episode, particularly in which Jill was eliminated, which required the Iron Chefs to show a mastery of molecular gastronomy, the sort of chemical and process-driven cuisine that I think that everyone we know in the food industry is talking about. You know, was that fair? Should someone, in order to be seen as an accomplished chef or even the most accomplished chef in America, have to have a functional skill set in that cuisine? And I don't know.
Does the next Iron Chef have to have that skill set?
So you were about to say something, Jill, when we broke up, something that you imagined.
Well, we were discussing David Burke's flavor spray.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine that it would probably be a natural, I'm just guessing, some kind of natural derivative on olive oil. Is that what it is?
Jill, you're guessing wrong.
Okay, all right, so I don't know about that. All right, so change of subject and back to the more important subject at hand, which is, does an Iron Chef need to be coiffed in using molecular gastronomy? I personally don't care about it. I don't find it to add that much. If you know how to use it, yes, it can add a lot of different dimensions to different food. Okay, yes. That being said, I don't think that it would add any dimension. In fact, it took away from many dimensions on the show of my food.
What do the other contestants feel about it?
A lot of them were just completely blown away. No way. One of them wanted to walk out. They're like, I'm not doing this. The other one, people just laughing. A lot of them, quite a few of them use some of the more realistic techniques, i.e. the immersion circulator, which is basically like a slow poach.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, yeah, and if nobody's familiar with that, basically it's kind of like putting a pot on low temperature with water, only it circulates around and keeps a constant movement within the water so that things cook at the right temperature.
Like a sous vide machine.
Correct. Everybody understands that.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the chemicals, though, they're fun, they're intriguing, like I said, a little circus Vargas.
The other thing is why this is, and among viewers of the show, I mean, it's great TV because among our friends, it's people are talking about it and emailing about it.
Right.
And
not such good TV for me. No.
Well, not for you. Sorry.
is okay, guys. I'm totally cool with that.
Well, but here's the idea: is that so many people, and why people are having such a visceral reaction. It's not like saying, and it's we talked before the break a little bit, Mark, about you know, saying, okay, well, you know, yes, you need to be conversant with Italian ingredients and some Italian influence, and you need to be conversant with Mexican influences, and you need to be conversant with Middle Eastern influences.
Right.
This is a wholesale different thing.
That nobody really knows about quite.
Well, and it's so not much. Just that. I think some of the visceral reactions come to, there are a lot of chefs who've worked for years. This is antithetical to what they do. This
right.
is against
Especially
their principles.
Me.
Well, it's frankly antithetical to what we do. Now, I'm not saying that we can't take certain techniques from this movement, and I'm not saying that Fran Adria does wonderful things with this food and Wiley Dufresne.
But it is the opposite of a whole foods movement.
Opposite. And herein lies the theory that I kind of stick with. You know, food is a very religious thing to a chef. And when you practice a religion, you have a belief system. And, you know, knowing some things is fine. You can know about stuff, but your belief system is what you practice. And so to ask a chef to all of a sudden take their belief system and take some stuff that they kind of know about, you know, I know that the devil exists, but I believe in God, just say, for instance. So, you know that you believe in God, but here, now you have to use the devil. You're like, wait, that doesn't really make sense now, does it? Because we're all in a practice here.
Well, let me take the other side of this argument just for one second, even though I don't like being there. So let's say you owned a vegan restaurant and you were the greatest vegan chef in the world. Could you become an Iron Chef without cooking with meat? Is that a possibility?
Well, that doesn't really sound like it would work, considering the secret ingredient would Unless they were privy to that and they kind of held you.
But what if the secret ingredient one day is lecithin?
Right. Well,
oh, right. I understand. Okay. So maybe in the next 20 years.
No, but here. But here.
See, I think we're going to move. I think you're going to have the few people who do it wonderfully and everybody and the rest of us are going to move.
Well,
away.
I did it really poorly.
Yeah.
Hey, Jill. I'm going to make that known to everybody.
Hey, Jill, we love you, but yeah, we saw.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. Well, you know, it was fun because my idea was cool. But the execution for using liquid nitrogen, it should have been a table-side situation where it was done a la minute.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because by the time the dish got to the judges, it was defrosted.
Yeah. Why don't you tell our listeners about your dish and
sure.
where you might have changed it?
So I kind of, what they had asked for us to do was push the envelope and use all these crazy chemicals and kind of work. They were really asking us to kind of get out of our comfort zone to some degree. And so I thought I was playing around with liquid nitrogen, and what liquid nitrogen does is it instantly freezes something. And some people may be familiar with it in the doctor's office because it removes warts, which is fun.
My experience with it was there was an old Superman show where they tried to freeze him with liquid nitrogen and tried to crack him into a million pieces.
Okay, well, there you go. And that really does work, just so you know. So I kind of came up with a theory because I do very Mediterranean, California bistro, farmer-to-table, organic food. I thought, well, you know, wouldn't it be kind of cool to do a frizzo misto, which essentially when you freeze the vegetables, they become really crunchy and they take on a completely different characteristic. It's like when you have a piece of frozen parsley, it really is a cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it tastes and it crunches as if it were almost frozen. I mean, as if it were fried. So the concept was that, well, if I take, you know, I had a fine chiffonade of fennel and basil and different citrus, and I kind of did like a little, as if I were going to fry it, but instead of frying it, I put in the liquid nitrogen, and then I did a base of a really light basil consomme, and then I had a lemon cream, because we had to use the anti-griddle, and it was a little crazy. But and then I had a deep-fried baby artichoke. So I did a frizzo frito. So it was kind of a spin-off of, I wanted you to get the textural differences within the dish of having eaten the fried artichoke, which is something I make all the time.
Right, versus the frozen.
Versus the frozen, because a lot of times I will do deep-fried fennel and parsley and lemons. And so I thought, oh, that would be a really nice spin-off. And then I had an herbed goat cheese cream in there, which I, you know, thought it would all kind of come together. But really what happened, the end result being, and then I had a lemon foam or something, I don't even remember. I choose not to remember some of them. And so what happened was, by the time the judges got to the dish, the frizzo part was not frozen.
Not so good.
So it was a Frito Melto.
It was a little bit of a Frito Melto.
Yeah.
To sum it up, that was probably, yeah.
So
I'm not going to put that on my resume.
So now you're an accomplished chef. You actually run a restaurant. You have your own television show. You've received all sorts of awards and accolades. What was it like to be eliminated? Was it really an emotional thing?
Gosh. It was emotional to some degree because, let me tell you a little bit about my second dish, first of all.
Because
my second dish I thought was kind of innovative, and that's what they were asking for. And my theme for the whole challenge was, you know, in this cuisine, things appear to be kind of what they're not, and it's almost like an illusion.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so I had an overall theme. I haven't watched the episode, just so you know. I don't know if I was able to get that through, but that was my overall theme for the dishes. So my second dish, I did a faux bone marrow made out of potato, which I stuffed with wild and cultivated mushrooms and I think butter and truffles and, you know, just went with really simple preparations. Mm-hmm. And then we all had to use a protein, and I had a tug of war.
Right. I heard about the tug of war.
Oh, yeah, which we all love because, I don't know, it's we've come this far, people. I want, you know. So I ended up with a butterfish.
Mm-hmm.
Which and we had to use a certain amount of the equipment and the smoking gun, and so there were regulations as to what we had to use up. So I did a little bit of a dish with the, I lightly smoked the butterfish, and then I did the faux marrow, and I called it a I called it a faux buco or something.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. I don't
right,
know.
The play on osobuco.
Yeah, it was a play on of it. Not the traditional Italian,
right, of course,
obviously.
Of course.
Right. So, and that was my whole theme for the whole thing. Like, everything is just very circus to me.
And so, how was the execution of that dish different than what you'd envisioned? How did it turn out, in your opinion?
You know, the fish, well, it was about 3 hours before you presented to the judges. So, trying to cook your fish in sous vide, letting it sit,
mm-hmm.
and then presenting it, mm-hmm. not so good.
Yeah,
let's be honest. That's probably not within, yeah.
So I got to tell you, if I were a professional chef and I were on the next Iron Chef and I lost on the Molecular Gastronomy show, I'd be pretty ticked off.
Yeah, that's the way to go. Hey, we need to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a moment talking more with Chef Jill Davey of Josie Restaurant Los Angeles and of the most recently of the next Iron Chef. 1450 WCTC time is 11:46.
I think it's great that more and more restaurants are offering larger selections of wine by the glass. Unfortunately, I often find those by the glass wines flat or spoiled. It's been my experience that most wine preservation systems just don't work until now. The Vinfinity system was invented by Armando Luis, a mechanical engineer with over 25 years experience in the wine industry. Vinfinity has 3 U.S. patents, but it's so simple I could kill myself for not inventing it first. Vinfinity creates a precise vacuum in the bottle that preserves the wine. Too much vacuum or too little and the wine is damaged. Vinfinity never needs gas and requires little maintenance. One Vinfinity system preserves any number of wines. We use just one system for both of our restaurants, and we're not alone. Some of the best restaurants in the country are taking on the Vinfinity system. The guest gets a large selection of wines by the glass in great condition, and the restaurant eliminates waste. Tell your favorite restaurant about it. If you own a restaurant, install it. Find out more at VinfinitySystem.com or call 201-988-5953.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. We're talking with Jill Davey, most recently of the Next Iron Chef, and also chef de cuisine of a Josie restaurant out in California, Los Angeles. So we were talking before the break, and we never quite got to it, about now the Next Iron Chef is, you're an accomplished, well-known chef. You have your own TV show. You actually run a restaurant. You have a lot of great press. What was it like when you found out you were eliminated? Emotionally, what's that like? You really put yourself out there emotionally on a limb. How's that work?
Emotionally, it's awful. It was truly not so great. However, you know, I can't take it too personally. I've never worked with any of this stuff. I felt like I should have gone with really simple things that I knew would have worked. Instead of going with my theme of, you know, the circus theme.
Well, let's turn the conversation now. If there's something good that's come out of the show, I think it's that a lot more people know who you are and know where you're cooking. And let's take it from reality show to reality. Tell us what it's like in what you're doing at Josie Restaurant in Los Angeles. What your not the reality show, but the reality of Jill Davey's cooking every day is.
Well, the reality of my cooking is I work really closely with all of our farmers. Who wouldn't? I mean, I'm in Santa Monica, and I've been in Santa Monica for 10 years as a chef. So I know my farmers. I work really closely with them. And when I create a menu, I go to the market. I look around, fill up my little Cadillac dolly.
Yeah.
Not really Cadillac at all. But fill it out, take it back, and kind of assess what's going on and seasonality and... You know, it's always a new, fresh approach to everything when you work really comfortably and closely with all these great ingredients.
Okay, hold on. You're in Santa Monica. Your winter's like 4 days old. How do you do winter in Santa Monica?
Well, our farmers markets are just incredible. So all of the winter squashes are coming up right now, and it's everything changes, and it's great because you can actually see it from week to week, like the dwindling of the summer and the onset of the winter. How, like, well, okay, winter is not as extreme. And we still go to the farmer's market 365 days a year for the most part.
Well, you know, one of the things that's interesting, looking at it from an East Coast perspective, and we've been out to visit the West Coast.
Yeah, our East Coast perspective is we go to the farmer's market in the middle of winter, and we can buy a painting.
Right.
Well, yeah, and there's...
Well...
Or some snowballs.
Well, exactly, a snow cone.
One of the things about L.A., though, is and of course, everyone pays attention to San Francisco and Northern California cuisine. But the articles in the national press seem to be, over the last 10 years, L.A. is the next big thing. L.A.
Yeah,
never
we're doing great. We've got a lot of up-and-coming young generation chefs that are opening up their places. So.
Well, the way it's worked, just looking at it from the last 10 years from the national press perspective, it seems to be the article is, L.A. the next big thing. L.A. is nothing. L.A. is great. L.A. is nothing.
Right.
And it seems to be fashionable to say to cast L.A. in one extreme light or the other.
Right. To hate then love you.
What is going on in L.A.? What is going on in L.A. food overall? Because it was never known as the food town that San Francisco was known as.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the most difficult things about L.A. is the perception when you come here, everything's about 20 minutes away.
Mm-hmm.
But with traffic now, it's becoming more like 40 minutes away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really difficult to get around. And specifically, if you're not familiar with Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
and if you don't know your way around, it can be a little trying. And with all the traffic and you have to know what time to go.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I think that has worked as a disadvantage to us for many years. You know, you go to San Francisco, you go to Chicago, you go to New York, it's like 5-minute cab ride, 10-minute walk, what have you. Los Angeles is so spread out that you have to, it's almost every restaurant becomes a destination dining situation.
Well, the other thing that we have a lot of friends who have gone out and worked in various places across the country. Of course, you know, we've been in the restaurant business for 20 years. People have said they found the culture of restaurants in L.A. To be, as working there, to be very different, because some of my friends are very surprised that they say, you know, when you go for a job in an L.A. restaurant as a waiter, you send a headshot. You know,
yeah, absolutely.
Now, how does that culture?
Which makes me laugh because I do TV, more TV than most of my waiters.
but why?
Makes me laugh. It means I can't be a waiter in L.A.
But in New York or San Francisco, you don't send a headshot to be a waiter. You mm-hmm. apply and it's based on what you can do in the restaurant. Why do the waiters have to be beautiful in L.A.?
Well, it's all the industry that we have here.
Uh-huh.
Which makes me laugh also because being a fifth generation Californian, I was born and raised here. I went to Venice High. Very local girl. Everybody has their perception of what LA is. And
uh-huh.
But whenever they come here, they're like, wow, you're actually from here? I've never met anyone from here.
Right,
like,
exactly.
So how do all these other random parts and pieces represent who we are as, you know, because I grew up with all my best friends and most of them still live here. I'm like, no, this is us. This is the real us. We don't go to Hollywood. We're not really all up in our, you know, business about being who's who, and we're just living our lives, and we're pretty cool.
So we're going to recommend that you guys go out to Josie Restaurant and see Jill Davey and see the real L.A.
We have.
I want to ask you guys, what did you guys think of the show, and what's your...
We'll answer that question after the break. We'll take a short break. You'll be back with the Restaurant Guys in just a moment. 1450 WCTC time is 11:56. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys, talking with Jill Davey, the former contestant on The Next Iron Chef and Chef Cuisine at Josie Restaurant in Los Angeles. You asked us what we thought of the show before the break. I think I really like the Iron Chef show and the Top Chef show. Those are the two shows that I really like.
And I think the concept of Next Iron Chef, and one of the things that I was really excited about with this particular show was that it was real chefs. And one of the things that Francis and I made a comment even before the show started when we got the list of people going on was it's going to be difficult for these judges because basically the chefs are more accomplished even than the judges.
Some of the judges, yeah.
Right.
Well, but here's the deal. I think the show is relevant to cooking. I think the Iron Chef is fun. But I think this molecular gastronomy challenge was controversial for a reason, and
yep.
I don't think that should be part of becoming, if you're looking at becoming an important American chef, I don't think you need to know about that.
But more importantly, because I haven't seen it, Do you think I should have done the show?
No, yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Look, here's the deal. You know that? Yeah, the whole thing that as long as they spell your name right, you're on national network TV. Are you kidding me?
Excellent.
Get me up on national network TV and make fun of me. That's what I want somebody to do for
me. One of the things that I do appreciate about this particular show, and it's only two episodes old. Talk to me in six more episodes, and I'll give you a better opinion. But so far, what I've seen is they have held you up to the fact that you guys are professionals, and this is your vocation, and you are accomplished.
Accomplished.
We keep using that word accomplished because that's what you guys are.
So overall, I think it was great that you went on the show, and I think this is maybe the most talked about episode overall because of how it went down, and it's great to be in the center of such a controversy. Hey, we need to leave it there. I hope you all have enjoyed the hour restaurant guys. Jill, thanks for coming on the show. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys. 1450 WCTC time is 12 noon.